More than 90,000 private sector jobs were created last month, while there were even more planned layoffs. From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, hello, I'm Steve Chiatakis. It is the Marketplace Midday Update, our podcast from Marketplace.org. Today is Wednesday, October 5th. Well, coming up is the European debt crisis becoming a banking crisis. Greek workers are still unhappy about budget cuts, so they're on strike again. And voters can now go to the store and buy booze on Election Day in the Wild West. Well, West Virginia. Those stories and more on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Don't miss the numbers, the news, and Kai's final note. Subscribe to the Marketplace podcast. Find it on iTunes or online at marketplace.org/podcasts.
If the economy has a bit of whiplash going on today, it's because of a couple of reports that show very different things. First, payroll firm ADP said private employers added 91,000 jobs in September, more than expected. Meanwhile, another report shows planned layoffs last month reached a two-year high. That's according to employment consultants Challenger, Gray, and Christmas. Now, the firm says cuts in military ranks and layoffs at Bank of America accounted for most of the more than 115,000 planned cuts. John Challenger is with us from Chicago to talk about today's report. John, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Most planned cuts in more than 2 years? You surprised about that?
Well, I'm shocked, maybe not surprised. We know the economy is not going at much of a pace, and that means there's just very little job creation. People are losing their jobs as companies cut back as we get into the fourth quarter.
I want to talk about these ADP numbers, John, that came out just moments ago, 91,000 jobs created. Sounds like good news. I mean, what does this say about job creation in this country?
Well, it's good news in that it's not negative. We saw zero jobs created last month, so positive is certainly room for some hope. But it's not going to drive unemployment down. We need about 150,000 jobs created each month to do that.
In the private sector?
Yes.
Yeah. Your report mentions Bank of America, of course, which is in the private sector. They announced job cuts, but big cuts in government jobs, like the military. Where is that coming from?
Well, this is my biggest concern right now. We're seeing major cuts coming out of the military as soldiers come back from overseas. That's only going to continue. This is just the Army. We've got other branches to come. Unemployment for vets in Afghanistan and Iraq wars right now is at 16.6%, way higher than the 9.1% national average. And now we've got a flood of new vets coming back into the job market.
A flood of new vets, and what kind of challenges are they facing as they come back, John?
Very difficult in terms of how do you translate the skills you've gained in the military into the private sector. A lot of times there's just not a direct connection. They may need retraining. Certainly their leaders are much more mature at a young age from what they've faced than others, but to find their way into the job market not having been there can be very difficult. And that doesn't count some of the emotional issues you get when you come back from fighting a war.
Certainly. All right, John Challenger from Challenger, Gray & Christmas. John, thanks.
Thank you.
The U.S. Justice Department and the Attorney General's Office in New York are suing Bank of New York Mellon, claiming the bank cheated pension funds for a decade and made off with more than $2 billion. Marketplace's Gregory Warner is with us this morning to talk about that story. Good morning, Gregory.
Good morning.
So what is Bank of New York really accused of doing here?
They are being accused of tricking their institutional clients on foreign currency transactions. Alleged victims include the state of Mexico, New York, YMCA, pension funds at Duke University, Walt Disney, others. So these investors all gave their money to Bank of New York Mellon to make currency trades on their behalf. The question is pricing. The suit alleges that the bank, when it made those trades for its clients, routinely chose the very worst price of the trading day, and then it obtained more favorable prices for its own trades that day and pocketed the difference. That difference, as you said, added up to $2 billion over a decade.
What is Bank of New York saying? How are they responding to this?
Well, Bank of New York, in a statement, vigorously denied wrongdoing. I phoned up a few bankers about this morning. Nobody agreed to talk on the record about an existing lawsuit, but they told me, look, on the one hand, of course, you expect a bank to get the best price for its clients, but unless the agreement spells out exactly how a trade has to be executed, then it's going to be up to the currency traders, and they're going to manage their books, no surprise, for their own profit. And that may not be fair, but does it break the law? That's what the case will come down to.
All right. Marketplace's Gregory Warner reporting for us this morning. Gregory, thanks.
Thanks.
Show Marketplace how much you like us. Stay connected to our hosts, reporters, and top stories on Facebook. Find us at facebook.com/APM Marketplace.
Now the Marketplace Global Perspective. If the secret to fixing the European debt crisis is restoring confidence in European banks and countries, then really it all comes down to what we know. What do we know about what the banks are holding? What do we know about what the governments can do about it? When it comes to the European debt crisis, we at Marketplace get a lot of our information from European correspondent Stephen Beard. And Stephen spoke with Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson, my co-host, usually on this program. Jeremy is in London, and Jeremy spoke with Stephen Beard.
I want to first start by asking you, because we go to you very frequently when we cover the European debt crisis. We're hearing from you, a Brit. And often in U.S. media, people are hearing from Brits covering this crisis. Do you think that there is a British anti-euro bias because you guys are not part of the euro and you look at it and say, let them do what they want?
Heaven forbid that we would show bias, Jeremy. No, I think skepticism is a better word. You're right, Britain didn't join the euro. It was skeptical about it in the run-up to the launch of the euro. This country's always been rather semi-detached in Europe, a rather reluctant member of the European Union. But boy, are the Brits glad today that they didn't adopt the euro.
But do they feel now that they're somehow immune from the European debt crisis? I mean, surely it would reach the shores of the UK if things were to start defaulting.
It certainly would. There may be some Brits who are still gloating about the disarray in continental Europe, but I think the reality is sinking in. Britain is horribly exposed to this crisis.
Is there a moment, Stephen, because you've been traveling all over Europe covering this crisis for Marketplace the last couple of years, is there a moment that sticks out in your mind when you realized the magnitude of this thing?
Yes, I think it's in Athens. I was covering a big protest march. I went back to my hotel, switched on the television, and there was a documentary, newsreel of the Second World War, marching stormtroopers, Hitler ranting, and it went on and on for hours. The anti-German sentiment in Athens is extraordinary. And this is the real irony and the paradox of this. The euro was part of this whole process of integrating Germany within Europe after the Second World War, creating harmony and friendship. It seems now to be having the opposite effect.
Well, Stephen, let me ask, can this be compared to the United States? If there was one state that wasn't doing so well, needed to be bailed out by the other states, I assume that that could be done without bringing down the entire union.
Big difference. In the Eurozone, we're talking about 17 different countries, different cultures, different histories, different traditions, different languages. And that is an absolutely key point. Because of the language barrier in Europe, there's not the labor mobility that there is in the United States. Mm. People can't go from one depressed part of the Eurozone to another as easily as they might be able to in the US. Language is all important. Language is the key. After all, language is why you're talking to me about the Eurozone debt crisis.
You speak English.
We speak the same language, more or less.
More or less. Marketplace's Stephen Beard. Stephen, it's great to be here with you in person in London.
And great to see you, Jeremy.
In Athens today, airline flights are grounded, transit hampered big time, and schools have been shut down. Thousands of public workers protested in big government budget cuts outside the parliament today, chanting, "The rich must pay." Well, meanwhile, the Financial Times reports the massive Greek debt has European finance ministers looking for ways to shore up some of the biggest banks there, banks that are exposed to bad sovereign debt. Reporter Caitlin Carroll has more from Berlin.
European governments are feeling a sense of urgency to strengthen the capital position of the banks. Jobst Fiedler is a professor of public and financial management at the Hertie School of Governance in Berlin. He says without help, those banks in a weakened position would fail.
It's like in the African desert. That animal which is limping is caught first. That means not only the shareholders would devalue the bank, but those who have deposits would have a run on those banks.
Fiedler says in order for European governments to coordinate efforts to support the banks, there needs to be greater clarity on the financial position of these banks. The other thing that needs to change is more action, less talking.
In the U.S., you had not really large hesitations to capitalize one of your endangered banks after the Lehman crisis. In Europe, in some countries, it still has to be overcome that the state has to directly intervene, becoming bank shareholders.
And convincing a bailout-weary public that the banks deserve help may be the toughest hurdle of all. In Berlin, I'm Caitlin Carroll for Marketplace.
There's a hearing today at the House Ways and Means Committee looking at free trade agreements with South Korea, Colombia, and Panama. Congress is expected to vote on those agreements within the next couple of weeks. So we wondered, how exactly does a deal with, say, Panama actually create American jobs? From Washington, here's Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer.
The agreement will make it easier for Panama to send fruit and textiles to the U.S. We'll sell Panama more heavy machinery to expand the Panama Canal. Economist Jeff Schott is with the Peterson Institute for International Economics.
Many major U.S. equipment manufacturers have the opportunity for tremendous new business if they can get in and compete on a level playing field.
The trade agreement phases out tariffs, making all U.S. goods cheaper in Panama. The International Trade Commission estimates that U.S. rice exports to Panama will more than double. This all sounds great, but how many U.S. jobs would this deal actually create? Robert Pastor teaches international relations at American University. He says the U.S. exports so little to Panama that even tripling rice exports wouldn't mean much.
In 2010, we exported more than 40 times more to Mexico than to Panama.
And Pastor says Panama exports so little to us, it won't cost many U.S. jobs. So why bother with Panama? Meredith Broadbent is a trade policy analyst at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. She says we can't ignore even small countries because our competitors are cutting favorable agreements with them.
And it's resulting in a bit of a spaghetti bowl of overlapping free trade agreements. But it's a system that we do need to be a part of rather than sitting back from and trying to sell to the 5% of consumers that live in the United States.
Broadbent says it's a big world out there, and we need to sell wherever we can. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
By now, you're probably well aware that Apple has unveiled its latest iPhone, the 4S, and it's not a totally redesigned fifth version. It's just an upgrade of the fourth version. Well, the phone's camera got a big upgrade, though, and Marketplace's Jennifer Collins reports on what that means for digital camera makers.
Apple's new iPhone camera has a higher resolution, a low-light lens, and it takes pictures fast, in about a second. Michael Gartenberg is with research firm Gartner.
You add it all up together, and it means you have a ubiquitous camera in your pocket as well as a phone.
He says for camera makers like Canon, Olympus, and Nikon, that's a problem.
I think we've hit the beginning of the end of the point-and-shoot camera. So many people are using their camera phones instead of taking along another device.
Of the 600 billion digital pics taken by amateurs every year, 60% are taken on camera phones. The market for digital cameras is flat. But industry analyst Steve Hoffenberg says camera phones still have a long way to go before they displace the point-and-shoot completely.
People like having separate, dedicated digital cameras to use for special occasions.
Like when you're on vacation or your kid graduates from college. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
We got word today applications for home mortgages fell last week. That's largely reflecting a drop in demand for refinancing home loans. Well, a couple of lawmakers from Georgia are planning to introduce a bill today in Congress that would help struggling homeowners make those mortgage payments with money from their retirement savings. Edgar Tragetz from Georgia Public Broadcasting reports.
Nationwide, there are more than 3.5 million homeowners falling behind on their mortgage payments. Georgia Senator Johnny Isaacson and Congressman Tom Graves have drafted a bill that will allow people to tap retirement accounts like 401ks and avoid the usual 10% penalty for early withdrawal. Jim Sicasio is with RealtyTrack, which follows the housing market.
How do you kill an elephant? It's one bite at a time. I think this is not the panacea, it's not the cure-all, but is one step in the right direction.
But is it really a smart move to take from your future to pay down debt now? Atlanta financial planner Casey Patrick says in most cases, yes, but there's something homeowners need to remember. Even without the penalty, they still have to pay taxes on the withdrawals.
And in some cases, when individuals take up to $50,000, they don't realize that $50,000 will quite possibly be taxed at one or two tax brackets higher than their current tax bracket.
Realty Tracks Ocasio would like the bill to go further, like making a retirement account withdrawals penalty and tax-free to make mortgage payments. In Atlanta, I'm Edgar Tragetz for Marketplace.
Finally this morning, it was Election Day yesterday in West Virginia, and for the first time since 1863, that was during the Civil War, by the way, residents were able to buy alcohol in stores. Up until Tuesday, that was a big no-no in West Virginia. Because of old concerns, politicians would try to sway voters with booze. Well, the state legislature rescinded the 148-year-old law earlier this year, marking the first time West Virginians have had the opportunity to drink before they found out who won. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Enjoy your Wednesday. This is the Marketplace Midday Update. And this is APM, American Public Media.